This is CliffCentral.com.
Bang, 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 it's Zakes Bantwini. Yes, 36-year-old platinum-selling artist and producer, born and raised in KZN as Zakhele Mardida. He has multiple albums under his belt. He's also a former ballet and stage performer. And who doesn't know the name Zakes Bantwini in South Africa? Very, very cool. Let's bring him in here. Let's meet the man. I think this might be the first time I've actually sat and spoken to him properly, one-to-one. Sia knows him well.
Relatively so. It's actually funny. No, it's from back in the day. And I
really?
Now, the thing is, I hate bringing up stories like this because even earlier we were talking about name dropping.
Which you do, but that's fine.
But back in my younger years, I was probably about like... No, it's like 16 or 17, and I was part of the Durban Youth Council.
Yes.
And we used to meet at the Bat Center, and there was a lady who runs that, and she goes, listen, there's this guy. His name's Zakes Bantwini. And I'm like, of course I know who Zakes is. And she goes, Zakes is here. I'm like, okay, let me pull him into one of our meetings and say, like, Zakes, please, could you say a few words? Could you motivate the council?
You must have been so annoyed.
No, I wasn't.
We had a picture and I actually looked at it yesterday. I was like, Lord,
okay,
have
no, but
mercy,
hang on.
He even agreed.
But do you remember this, Zakes?
I remember that I do a lot of talk. My office is actually at the Pet Center, and that's the plan. The plan is that everybody, because it's like an incubation of the arts,
yes,
and everybody just meets there. So I took my office because I want them to see a guy who's making it, mm-hmm, walking here.
You know, and you, do you remember here. An annoying young guy?
I do remember him, actually. No. I do remember you. Seriously.
Okay. Yeah, you said it was when he was 16 or 17, so it was only a
It was 2 years ago.
It was
last week. Here he is, everybody. Zakes Bantwini.
Guys, thank you.
Pleasure to meet you, man.
Thank you very much, guys. I'm so happy I'm here. You know, I'm glad to meet you. I've never seen you live, Garrett, but I know about you. I know about you.
What do you know so that we can just get that out of the way?
Very opinionated.
You know? All right. What I know about you is that you are... People just love your music. You've done very well in terms of record sales. You're a great performer.
Yep.
Where did it all start, though? That I don't know.
I think I kind of like started my my early entertainment, you know, involvement when I was back in the days on a dancer. So I started as a dancer first.
Mm-hmm. Is this in the ballet?
Well, I didn't start as a ballet dancer. I started as in like an electro, so like more like a hip hop, but very technical. It's not like, you know, boom bang. You know, it was very. We used to call it electro because it was kind of like a smooth one. You know, we used to think we were the best, and we felt like the best.
But this is, you mean a real discipline, not just people dancing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was very choreographed, very high tech. So I once did that. This is after. I was a soccer player, and every time I was so upset that the coach would not pick me sometimes. And I was like, I can't train.
Why didn't the coach pick you?
Well, they would pick me and don't pick me sometimes. So you
there was no
consistency. Not sure. Actually, if you're a soccer player, you're not sure if you're going to play on Saturday. I mean, Matthew Booth, you remember what happened to him?
Yeah, you can't be like that.
You know, like you can't be like, so you cannot really lay your faith. Someone has to decide for you. And I was like, I'm not going to be part of this thing. So at least if I'm a dancer, when I rehearse, I'm going to be on stage.
How well did you play soccer?
I played soccer very well. I was good at it.
What position?
I was really good. I was in number 11, but I was right. Well, now I was forward. So you call it forward now. So it's not all about numbers. So I was playing forward left.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I was good.
What was this coach's problem? Because you could have been set off. You could have been set off on a great career there. It sounds like you really wanted
I was very good at soccer, so I would score goals. So I was good. I think I remember this one time. You know, we were playing, and I think we were a goal down, And I was a substitute, and I scored 2 goals. So I was quite a good player. But I hated the fact that someone had to say, okay, now
so has this coach been appointed the coach for Bafana yet? Because that's the kind of stupid decision-making that usually leads to Bafana.
Actually, it's so funny because I think in my later years, I'd like to have an agency.
Yeah.
You know, a soccer agency, sports, because I think I do lots of. So, yeah, I actually met with him. I was like, hey, I have money now.
Instead of abandoning your entire soccer career, did you not consider going to a shittier team and being the best player on that team? I mean, if the only issue was not getting to play every week,
I always want to be the best, man. I always want to play for the best team.
It seems to me that you're able to move, though, because whether you're a footballer, whether you're a dancer,
yeah.
And on stage performing in front of people, you have to be able to, you must have incredible body coordination.
Yes.
And like obviously later on when you did the ballet and all the rest as well.
Yes, yes.
You learn to move your body in ways that the rest of us, because most human beings are quite inelegant.
Yes.
You know, we kind of flap around and we, you know, we sometimes slump our shoulders. And when you're a ballet dancer or a footballer, you know how to coordinated.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I think when I was a ballet dancer by default, because we did something called Tenshongololo in back in the days in Playhouse, the Playhouse Theatre. And when we won that competition, we flew to Johannesburg for the first time to participate in another dance extravaganza called Dance Umbrella. I think it's still happening now in Johannesburg. Back in the days, and from there, so we ended up doing contemporary dance. So now contemporary dance, Kampot standards, where it came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when then I had to go to school to study music. So I was in a database, a Playhouse database. So they called me. They're like, there's a guy from France. They're looking for dancers to do a 6 months, tour in 16 countries. So we thought that maybe you want to come and participate. And I remember telling my mom that, hey, Ma, I think I want to go there. She was like, okay, whatever that you want to do. I went there. So I was picked to like, it was only 9 people that they took. So I was picked that I had to choose between, you know, continuing with my studies, music studies, or go overseas. I was like, listen, I'm gonna go overseas. So I went overseas, and the guy was a ballet dancer, you know, initially. So she was doing something, he was a ballet dancer, and apparently one of the teachers that taught him was like the best ballet dancer in Paris. So then we ended up now learning this ballet stuff, because we had to teach the ballet in all these African countries. So it was like a boom, like you have to do this thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how I found myself. Now I found myself doing this ballet dance. At first it was kind of like difficult because, you know, ladies are beautiful and you have to touch and you have to touch some certain parts and stuff like that. I'm glad that I did, man. I'm glad I did.
Now we'll get on to you got married to Nandi. You met her at a SAMA nominee party,
yes,
right?
Yes,
but
yes,
you actually got your first SAMA, your first award, your Metro Music Award, as the best male.
Yes.
Was it the 10th Metro Awards of 2011?
Yes, 2011, yeah. And then I was nominated 5 times at the SAMAs and I didn't win anything.
Oh,
I still don't have a SAMA, but a lot of people do not even know.
Do you know
that
who the judge was? Was the coach from that soccer team?
But you know what? It's so crazy. They made me perform, and this was the first time. They made me perform at the end. I was the first artist to ever experience that you perform at the end and didn't win Song of the Year. Because previously, everybody who performed at the end would win Song of the Year. So my thing was like, okay, I'm performing, I'm closing the show, so the Song of the Year is
mine.
Did
that piss you off a little bit?
In a way, it did piss me off, but at the same time, I remember saying to myself when they were just about to announce that award, I was like, if these guys did not pick me up, I'm going to perform my ass off.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make them feel that we did a wrong decision. And I think I did, because I don't know who won the Song of the Year then, but all I know is that he's not here having an interview with you.
There we go. Also, it probably proves that at least it's not rigged. Not that that's any real consolation to you.
No. Yeah. No, definitely. I think that perhaps, because it was the issue of people are judging ABCD maybe during summer or, you know, a certain time. So you have to submit this maybe before the end of November. And that at that time, no song is actually that big. And by the time it's December, every song, every artist, this artist, you've already judged the artist. So you submitted your list in November and the biggest song comes through in December. And by then you can't change. And February you go
sort of
to
like
the awards.
The Oscars, they nominate for the Oscars now and it goes out to the Academy. And by the time we hit like January, we've forgotten the movies that are on now.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done a lot of interesting stuff in your life. I mean, we'll talk also about your ambassadorship in a little while. Because I think that's a hell of a story. Your albums we'll talk about too, but I didn't realize that you had been the executive head of A&R at Sony Music.
Yeah.
Between 2013 and 2015.
Yep.
Now that's a very corporate, very, very important job, but it's very corporate, even though you're involved in music, and A&R is particularly useful to have someone who's got some experience like you have. But that's a serious job. Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. I had a corner office. I think it was great.
Didn't it pull you away from your own music?
It did. I mean, it did. Right now, I'm like, someone will feel like I'm resuscitating my career, you know, because I haven't been putting out music for a very long time. And some people who actually been following me, they know that I actually sacrificed because I left at the height of my career, you know, to go and sit at the boardroom and try to make, you know, this music industry thing of South African music better for us, you know, especially South Africans. And I remember saying this and some people laughed, and I was like, these people are laughing because they don't understand what I'm saying. I said, I'd like to be a Nelson Mandela of music. And they like, who does he think he is, you know? And for me, it was the analysis was the fact that Nelson Mandela was a lawyer and his wife was a social worker, Winnie Mandela. And they had a good life. Probably they were going to buy tickets and go overseas during apartheid. But they didn't. They sacrificed their careers to try and make sure that this is happening right now. And it was that. Like, I have to sacrifice my career to make sure that at least a South African artist have at least a continental career. Because I feel like we're busy dominating each other here in South Africa. That's it. And we can be excited that we feel it, that Casper might fill up the Dome, but can he fill up an Accra Stadium? Maybe not. Can he fill up Ouagadougou? Can he fill up Benin? Can you fill up, you know, all these countries?
This is that big fish in a small pond thing, right?
Exactly. So I felt like all these companies, record companies, Sony, the Universal, all of them, it's easy for them to tell us about Chris Brown, about the Augustines, and about Trey Songz. People who are failing even to fill a 4,000 club in New York, but here they'll come at the dome and then they fill it. So it's easy for them to tell us about these artists, but it's hard for them to tell these artists about us.
Do you regret putting your career on hold to do this? There's no regret at all?
No, not at all. I mean, the sacrifice is a sacrifice. I might not enjoy what I've put out or what I've changed. I might not enjoy, but I was not doing it for me. I was doing it for someone who will say, today, I have a tour. I'm going to Tanzania. I'm in South Africa. I'm in Benin. I'm in Ivory Coast. Yeah, I wanted that career. You know, I wanted at least if you can't have a global career, at least have an African career if you're a South African artist.
And there are many that have. But being an A&R, you have to be your talent spotting.
Yep.
You have to decide what song someone's going to put on their album.
Yep.
And this is in an old music industry sense. This was the most important position in a record company.
It is.
These are the guys.
It still
who,
is.
These are the guys who made or break or would break careers.
Yep.
But the music industry has changed so much that the record companies are not the most powerful actors in that industry anymore.
Yeah.
Don't you agree?
They might not be powerful actors when it comes to having a trending artist maybe in South Africa, but believe you me, they have this continent on lockdown. When you are there, you can communicate with people in the United States, in the UK, in also in other African countries.
So they have connections.
They have the machine. Like, for instance, today, the biggest artist in Africa arguably will be Wizkid and Davido. Mm-hmm. Happen to be from Nigeria. But they signed now. They Sony. Before that, they were never as this big. They are signed by Sony, both of them. So that's why they perhaps like the big, but they are signed as global artists. But here, we South Africans are signed as local artists. Even when you go into these record companies, there are two divisions. There's an international division, yeah, and there's a South African division, which therefore means that we are only servicing Cliff Central and all. That's what we're servicing. So, but we'll not give your music to someone in Namibia, but we'll give them Chris Brown. But it's the same record company. And you say, when you sample Chris Brown, I mean, it's only a link. Why don't you sample me as well? Why don't you say, it's Chris Brown, it's Zix Brown, it's someone else? Like, why does it have to be this guy? And these are things that someone had to, because no one was willing to do it. No one. No, nobody. Nobody was willing to do it. Do you feel, especially as artists.
Being in that position, were you able to make changes?
I think I did. And shout out to Sean Watson, you know, who's an MD at Sony Music. I think he really, really empowered me. Because when I joined Sony in 2011, believe you me now, this is after maybe 8 years in the industry professionally. I've been a manager, I've discovered people, I've been a frontline artist. But for the first 2 months, I didn't know what was happening and what was going on.
And how much of your time do you spend listening to music when you're A&R manager? Because
You listen to music all the time. Because obviously you also create your tastemakers. You also, you know, I had my tastemakers, people that were not known. So I would identify someone and be like, yo, this guy is always partying and blah, blah, blah. Let me get him. So I'll try social media, be like, yo, give me your number. So I would send him stuff like, what do you think of this song? Someone like, yo, is this X-Martin? Wow. You know, they wouldn't believe they're talking to me. You know, but I made tastemakers. And people was like, I like this song, you know, but we worked on a lot of projects. Levers, AKA, I think like my team really broke AKA to be this big.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Republic, KO. Mm-hmm. You know, I funny. But so we really, really, we're right at the front of where the hip hop was there. We're like, okay, I think hip hop is picking up. Let's sign hip hop artists. I think hip hop is picking up because we were right at the forefront of where the sound is going. Right now, I think Gom is like this big, you know?
Yes.
Like I think Gom is this big, but something also is coming. So I'm able to tell. Okay, I think that this is where the sound now is going. I think this is where the sound is going.
But you did start your own record label.
Yeah,
years ago before you started at Sony.
Yeah, 2004.
Right.
So now we are maybe, 11 years?
13 years
old. Yeah, we're 13 years old.
Imagine starting your own record label at 13 years old.
I can't even imagine the kind of headaches that you went through over that time period.
You discovered...
Like, it's not an easy thing.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. But also, I always want to change perception about musicians, change perception about my industry, just change perception altogether. And I think it's something that you did, Gareth, to change perception about radio.
Radio. I tried.
Yeah, to change perception about radio, because everybody knows who you were working for. And people were like, Gareth Cliff living this such a huge to start his own thing is probably going to fail. But you've inspired a lot. You've inspired Touch, you've inspired DJ Spoo, you've inspired a lot of people, even inspired me, you know what I mean? Because you know, so
that.
But it's something that it has to be done, and you put yourself, because you might have failed. and believe you me, we're looking at you like, okay, this is what he did wrong, okay, we're gonna fix that. This is what he did wrong, we're gonna fix that. So you're like a trailblazer. And somebody has to be. And I remember when I was in Durban, I said to myself, I do not want anybody to go to Johannesburg and suffer like I did, because he has a demo and he want to have a music career. We're going to have a record company here. It's going to be at the Bat Center. I want someone to use a 5 rand from Guamashu to look for a deal than to take a bus to Johannesburg. And today we have Afrotainment. Today we have...
Did you discover Lvovo as well?
I did. Actually, I think we wrote the blueprint of how record companies should survive in Durban, because all the other record companies are younger. I actually have a video clip advising DJ Tira on how he should concentrate on Afrotainment.
Wow.
Yeah. So I mean, back then...
But you've worked with everyone. I mean, I looked at the stuff that you've done in all of your albums. And you worked with Black Coffee in one. Yeah. Look at how well he's gone on to
yeah.
do. Huh?
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
really
yeah.
He's done incredibly.
Yeah, yeah. He's I mean Coffee, Demo, Shota, yeah. You know, all those are people that are that we actually met at school and today. But it's for us obvious. It's always been changing how the game has been played and to change perception. So for me, you know, doing that in Durban, for me going now at Sony Music, you know, and try, because no one will think that a recording artist will wear a suit and go to the boardroom, especially at the height of his career. And I did that, and I'm glad that I did. And also the perception around that musicians don't want to study. I went to school to study.
Well, I was going to say, like you think musicians, and a lot of musicians, people do think are just musicians. First of all, you play the piano among other instruments.
Yes, and a bass.
And the bass. He studied jazz and popular music at Natal Technikon. He went on to complete a degree in that at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Also, went and did a social entrepreneurship study at the Gordon Institute of Business Science. I mean, this man is... You're really, really smart. You're too smart for the music business.
No.
I thought people in music were meant to be feeling people, not thinking people.
that's how musicians are. I mean, musicians are people like that. Musicians should be like that. Musicians are like that. Musicians are smart people. Musicians are tastemakers.
Because music is a bit mathematical as well.
Exactly. I mean, we create dialogue. We talk about things. It's just that we talk about a lot of BS most of the time. so that's why BS is happening a lot in SA, because I think people who have a talkability around them, they choose to speak about BS. Mm. But if they can talk about issues, you'll see. I mean, the whole... Because, I mean, a kid would listen to Zakes Mantwini than to listen to a politician, man. Come on, really. Mm. They would rather engage with what I'm saying than to engage about what Figile Mbalula, even though he likes to be an entertainer, what he's saying. You know what I mean? Like, so if you think about it. So if you can really empower the art... If you really empower the art and empower people who are playing within the art space, you know, the whole narrative and the conversation in whatever in that country would change completely.
You wanted to ask something, Mabs?
No, I just wanted to find out from you, because, you know, there are a lot of kids who look up to successful artists and they think, oh, if I can just get my break and make it.
Yep.
But why is it so important for you to have studied all the things that you have studied? Because I suspect that a lot of these kids think, yeah, but I just want to become like the next big hip hop artist. Why do I need to go and get some degree in, you know, this, that, or the other? But for you, why was it important, and why would you advise that people empower themselves in that way?
Firstly, it was my mom. Mm. You know, my mom was a teacher. You know how teachers are.
Yes.
So my mom would say, when you want to excel and when you want to lead in anything, you need to study. You need to know the background, because you'll be different than the next guy. And I think I am different than the next guy, you know. But because I've survived this industry, you know, people feel the need to release each and every year for them to stay relevant and for them to stay in this career. And I mean, I take about 2-3 years. The first album was in 2010, my next one was in 2013, and now 2017. You see the break, but I think I am as relevant as ever.
Yeah, that's undisputable.
Yeah, I think I've been in this for a very long time, and it's not because I'm smart, because I'm very talented, but it's because I went to school, and I tell people that you have a different way of thinking. You know, school helps you to think differently, and school also give you a database of artists. You know, I have a lot of database of people and artists, and even not on the artists and people that I went to school with. Mm-hmm. I sometimes work in a boardroom, or sometimes work in a company, like, yo, I remember you at tech. And already, you know, so school gives you that, gives you that, like, I know, I remember you, I used to study with you. Oh yeah, maybe you are there to, maybe you are coming at Cliff Central, and the marketing manager is a person that you went to school with.
Yeah.
So it is, even the conversations now are easy, like, yo, actually I want to partner with you guys, this is what I want to do. So it school also gives you that. And a lot of people that I meet that I went to school, because even the day of graduation, people, it's different faculties graduating. And obviously they will see you graduating as well. It helps now if you are a celebrity, because everybody knows
and
that
for young black artists, that's important, because there aren't enough examples of people who have done well on more than their talent, who've actually gone and studied and who've done the hard work. Because, you know, a lot of, if you see examples only of people who've just managed to make it and then, you know, they had their 15 minutes of fame and then they disappeared.
Yeah.
It gives you a false idea of how the world works, right?
Indeed.
Yeah.
And indeed. And I see that. And every time when I go to these workshops, especially when the music workshops where people are talking to artists, I feel like people are lying, you know, telling them that you don't need school, this thing, you can do it. I'm like, we are lying, you know. Maybe you don't need school, but don't tell them that they don't need school, because you are robbing them of their careers, you know. But it's so easy, and to them, they think that perhaps they are empowering them. Like, no, guys, you know, you can do this thing. You know, you don't need school. You see, I went to school, I studied, but I'm not using that now. I'm like, but how can you say that? Like, really, like, how can you can study marketing and do something else? But listen, that marketing degree has assisted you in terms of, you know, your thought process and all these things when they're happening. So having school is never a waste, man. Like no. Really, you're better off educated and unemployed than
not educated.
So you're better off broke and with an education than not.
Can I ask you about Nandi? So you guys met at the SAMO Awards nominees party.
Yep.
And how long after that did you get married?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah. Three years. It took us three years.
When was Shaka born?
Last year, 22nd of November.
You realize, like, there's a bit of history in here. A woman called Nandi has a child called Shaga. Your name really should be Sezanga Khan, right?
I'm glad you know that history.
proud Zulu man.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She actually told me when we were dating that if I have a son, his name would be Shaga.
Now, Shaka is you're taking off a lot more time to be with him and to kind of look after him and spend a lot of time, because you have three other kids.
I push my album for. But yes, I have three other kids.
This is what you want to you don't want to have to be. I mean, you'd like to be around more than you were for your other kids.
I mean, you know, Gareth, when it comes to, there's a lot that the apartheid system did to African people, man. I mean, it's too much. And I think maybe us, everybody, black, white, Indian and colored, we don't understand the magnitude of that damage. I don't think that we actually understand. So we have politicians, we have psychologists, we have everybody, you know, talking about what is happening in South Africa. But you had a conversation right now with this beautiful lady talking about social media. She had done a research. She looked at this. I mean, social media is not even 10 years old, you know, but we already have a book. Now we have apartheid, which did a lot, but you don't actually have anything that you can read about in terms of its effects and how African people think because of us. So if you studied a Bantu education, how are you likely to think? How are you likely to think? And then you have a position of Minister of Finance, or you have a position and you've been, so your great-grandmother was a slave, and your grandmother was colonized, and then your mother lived in the apartheid, and then you lived 10 years of your apartheid because you were born in the 80s, and then you tested, and then now you have a position as the, and you are handling 1 billion. How are you likely to think? And you're from the township. How you like to think in that particular environment when you grew up without money, you face poverty, now you're handing a lot of money. How are you likely to think? And I think we really need a scientific analysis and a very much involvement on thinking white people who presided over apartheid and those who affected apartheid are likely to think. Will they sit down and have a conversation and be like, yo, now we are a rainbow nation, or they'd like, they would want to fight first, or they want to do it. It's not easy for us to have that particular conversation unless I feel like we still have to, the people who are writing, doing this PhDs and the thesis, I'd like for us to engage in terms of a mind of a person presided over apartheid and a mind of a person who lived through apartheid. How would they think right now in the new dispensation, and how would they engage? So when you wanna address the issues, because we get upset over your tweet sometimes, you know. Yeah. We're like, correct, is you know, he's a white guy, he's protecting white people. Mm. Probably we are doing exactly what we are supposed to do because the system tells us to think like that. You know, so these are things that we need to engage ourselves in, and because I mean apartheid was crafted through education. Vervoet had a PhD in sociology and psychology, and he still had cum laude. He's still the best student today at where we used to study.
He was in Holland. He was educated.
Yeah,
in that stuff.
He was the guy.
He was a genius.
He's still like regarded as the best student, and he went on to be a journalist. Well, he did psychology, so he did all these things. So when he crafted this, he had people. Education, he had education to craft it. And so you're going to address it by saying BEE. You're not going to address that.
But you know what? That's why when we do fight in South Africa and we withdraw into our racial camps or even our ethnic and tribal camps, which is the same thing really, it's just a smaller degree of it.
Yeah.
When we do that, I keep thinking like Vervoet sitting in that grave going, yes, I won, because that's what he wanted.
He wanted us
to think that way. He wanted black people to feel inferior. He wanted white people to feel
superior.
Without any good reason, superior.
Yeah.
And he wanted people to feel like they couldn't change that.
Exactly.
And that's exactly how so many
but
people
But you know
feel.
What he did, though? What he did right? He knew that he cannot just speak about, because people, even people who the system would favor, he didn't trust them. Everything was policy. Everything. So the interrelationship, you had a policy, so you will go to jail because you've
got a black wife.
You've got a black wife. You're gonna go to jail because you blah blah blah, because law.
Because you sit on that bench and it's for whites.
Because law. Yeah. He made it law. So it's a guy who actually tells you that you need to understand and apply education. Not everybody. So not everybody wants to change this world. Not everyone wants us to be a rainbow nation. Not everyone. So if it has to be law, push it as law. If you want to see something happening, you cannot then wish, hey, I wish that you guys can get along. You can't have a wish.
against the law, it doesn't say.
Yeah, you can't have a wish.
And how many of those apartheid laws are still in place?
I mean, they still are. You know, you have someone who wouldn't actually even pick up this, because sometimes you have a reverse racism where, I'm tired of white people, they've been doing this, so we are doing it to them. It's reverse, so you're not really
the same old law to do it.
Exactly. So you're really not assisting what is happening right now. Why? Because you think that you can analyze and change a system of a psychologist who planned this for a very long time with just a conversation or a conference. You can't. Vervoet studied that thing, guys. Come on, like you, Vervoet at least had about maybe 10 years crafting apartheid using his intellectual research and plans. Okay, this is what we're gonna call Group Areas Act. This is what is gonna happen. We're gonna the education has to be like this because this is who we want to breed. We wanna breed artisans. We wanna breed AP blah. This is what we want to breed. So when you go to the township, you ask a kid, why would you wanna be? We want them to say doctor, police. He made that system. He didn't even tell that you guys are going to be. He made it for you to say, I want to be a police. I want to be that. He created. So he was like, okay, what is the output? So the output is this. Okay, what will be the input? Here are the inputs. Bantu education, blah, 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 blah. This is the input. So even if I'm not there, this is how they will think. So we need to have a system that will say, even if we're not there, this is how South African black, white, colored, and will think.
But instead of that, instead of that, we're doing knee-jerk reactions, yeah, so, and we're not thinking long-term.
Yeah. So, I'd like to challenge everyone, especially those who want to sound smart, you know, analyzing how we behave, and especially on the NCA or NN7, and say, write a book. Tell research. I mean, this lady, she's social media. Write a book. Tell us. Tell me, what do I think? Tell me. I once read, because I sometimes read. No, I read a book called Brainwash. Mm-hmm. The guy speaks about, in terms of like the behavior. And for me, that's why I go to school. Because when you say something right, I don't wanna take what you say, you know, based on the public opinion.
Right.
I want to analyze on my own and be like, okay, get this. So people will think like, especially black people who have cars and on Instagram, and like, oh, these people, you know, they're lying to themselves. They are buying cars. They are buying all these things. And probably they are not thinking. And I'm saying to myself, but I know why these people are behaving like this. Because of their historic. So when you look at the world, It's an unspoken conversation. So you have pigments. So you have like will be like white at the top, and you have Asians, and then you have Africans. It's not something that is there, but it's there. So when a white man walks into a room, he will feel superior that I need to be served first before a black person. A black person, when he goes into a room, he would feel like he needs to fight for his space. You know, that sometimes a black person, even if he doesn't not supposed to get anything before a white man, but he will feel that he needs to get to prove that he, you know, we are not taking this serious. Why are you saving Garrett? But no, Garrett was here first. No, but I didn't see him. You know, because that's just how it is. So now what would Africans do? Now they'll buy cars. Now they'll buy cars, buy Louis Vuitton and buy all these things because they're trying to put veil in their skin. So when I drive in, you are in a restaurant, you're then gonna take me serious because you've seen what I'm driving. So that's what I'm actually buying that pigment, you know, for you to take me serious. So I'm on Instagram sending all these things because I just want, when you see me, I do not want you to treat me like other blacks because I'm different. You know, I have these things.
Zex, shouldn't you?
You know what I mean? Like,
wait. Shouldn't you then study psychology and then you start doing that for us?
I mean, this is amazing.
You start doing the research for us.
We have a lot of really smart people come in here and talk about our history in this country. And we've had theoretical discussions and we've had practical discussions. Some of the stuff you've said, honestly, it's the first time I've heard this. And it's ringing true, as uncomfortable as it is, it's ringing true because we don't analyze, you know, we're good at telling everybody else in the world what's wrong with them, and we like to show off what we're good at, and we keep talking about how we're the Rainbow Nation and all of this stuff. But psychologically, we've got massive damage that we haven't addressed.
Yeah,
and what you're saying is where it comes from.
Yeah, we need to address the psychological damage first.
So to break something as cleverly constructed, as insidious as apartheid.
Yeah,
to break that, you need to be much cleverer.
Yeah, and to address at least match.
We're
if you can't be better,
we're not going to dismantle this with hammers and nails. We're going to have to attack this with a surgical scalpel.
Yeah, seriously, and you have to have a serious round table of people, very well educated people, and say, okay, guys, in the township we have an issue, because we were talking about, we have an issue that, you know, young Africans, black one, kids, sometimes in the township you have to speak when you have a kid. I suffered from that. Oh, you don't know anything when you don't have a kid. I remember I was one meant to feel like I'm the man. Guy because I had kids. You know? And it took a while. It took my wife. It took a while for me to actually, you know, see the need that you cannot think kids before marriage. Marriage has to come first. But in South Africa, not only in South Africa, even the media, you know, even the media, the magazines, they will tell you about a celebrity, and the celebrity will, no offense to celebrity, they will go to, you know, and PR. You know, them being pregnant outside of wedlock, you know, and PR that, like, it's PR, like, well PR outside of wedlock. And then now the effect, because I go to the township all the time, Then you lay the effects. Ah, you know what? I just want to have a kid. You know, yeah, just want to have a kid.
How are you going to take care of the kid? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm having the kid because I'm just going to have it, whatever.
So the single parenting is a phenomenon. I'm like, but how would this be normal? How can you be comfortable that you're gonna raise that kid on your own as if it was good. What would you brag about?
Do me a favor, cancel the next three shows. We've got a lot to get through here. So hang on, this is something that came up the other day, and it also struck me as an uncomfortable truth. So people were talking about how, you know, single mothers work really hard to get their kids as many advantages, but their kids are always going to be disadvantaged. It's like if you're a single father, your kid is always going to be disadvantaged.
Definitely.
Because that kid doesn't have both aspects of what it needs when it's growing up. So as much as we go on in society and we say, well, single mothers are heroes, they are, right? Because they have no option.
Yeah.
But that kid, no matter how hard that single mother tries, is never going to be as good as the kid.
Now it's worse. They are creating themselves as one. So you have someone saying, I just want to have a kid. That's it.
Sure.
So it's a phenomenon. You guys, you'd know. Like it's there. It's like, yeah, I want to have a kid. So this, it's like,
yeah,
it's normal.
True.
It's normal that the dad is not there. It's like, it's normal. Like, how can our society accept this? Like, how can we put ourselves to this? Which is the reason why I was like, when I have a kid right now, I might have done those mistakes before, but I feel bad for my kids. Imagine I was there. But not there. I was there financially because we think that finance is very important.
Or
until,
it's enough.
Exactly. Until this last time when my daughter had a school function that was happening and I was there, you know.
It meant so much more to her, right?
It meant a lot to her. But what made me to think like I'll always be there for Shaga now, pushing my album, was I remember the teacher saying, Go and hug your mom and your dad.
Oof.
And that one African kid, the dad and the mom was not there.
Mm.
She looked around. You know, that thing was so painful to watch. And I remember this one, that family, which was close to her, like, come. And they hugged. I think it destroyed that kid. It destroyed. I was like, I would not want my kid to go through this. Any of my kids to go through this. So I avail myself for everything. If it's Father's Day, I'm there. If it's whatever, I'm there. So make sure that this does not happen. But I've seen it. I've seen the effect. So the dad and the mom, they don't understand that part of the effect. Because you know what? They were perhaps in the meeting. They were perhaps whatever. You know what? I'm working for her. I'm working for her. They need to be there. But you know, like, it's not working for her and giving her money. It is enough. Actually, being present is more enough than having money. I understand money is very important, but can you just be there at least?
This didn't come from nowhere. What kind of a woman is your mother? I know she died over a decade ago.
Yeah.
And that was very painful for you.
Yeah,
she must
have
been an incredible woman.
My mom was an incredible woman I've ever met. She was a community mother. Everybody, you know, I don't know how many people I've prayed for, you know, at home. People will come and want my mom to pray for them, and my mom thought that we were pure, you know. So she would ask us to come through and we'll put our hands and then we'll pray. Bored, we want to watch TV, and now we're subjected to pray for this person who has problems. You know,
so she was a very generous woman.
Very, 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 very generous. So I mean, I grew up knowing, you know, my mom would say, I hear a lot of people saying I don't care about what people say. You know? I'm not saying you should care, but if you have a way of changing that, do it. Because if you did not care what people will say, you will walk this street naked. The fact that you are dressing up, it means you do care about what people perceive you. So if you can change, if you know where the button to press for people to think differently, press it. Don't say, I don't care. Because if you didn't care...
I just keep rebounding in my head what you said just now, and I think it's so powerful, is that you, when you were talking about the construction of apartheid, just that one little part that you touched on about how there was a clear vision of the output wanted, and in order to then achieve that, there was lots of thought put into what are the inputs needed to achieve that.
Yes.
And now the reaction to that is always knee-jerk.
Yes.
Like, it's just such a powerful thing. We must decide what is the output that we want, and very carefully think about what are the inputs needed to achieve it, and, yeah, and do it in that. That's like a formula for success.
That definitely. Genius. I mean, we'll find that. Yeah. I mean, we'll find out that some of the things are not supposed to, we'll find out maybe we don't need a gender equality if we want the input. You'll find out that we don't need a ministry of whatever. We'll find out maybe we don't need social grants. Probably we need a minister of whatever. Probably we don't need that ministry. We are wasting a lot of money there. This is what we actually need.
Yeah, this thing needs to be made law. That thing must not be law.
That thing, yeah.
Zex, you were appointed as a UNICEF South African Celebrity Advocate. What does that mean? Is that work for you?
No, it's kids. No, it's ambassador. My time to try and better African kids.
Okay.
As you know, we kids are the most affected, species, especially when you look at the South African phenomena. We like, they're leading when it's come to abuse, sexual abuse, and all these things, and
child-headed households.
And you know, I'm totally against that. Like I say it all the time. When we grew up in an African setup, we never had that. You, when your mom dies, you have umamkhulu. Yeah, which is
grandmother.
Your mom's sister. Mm. When your mom's sister dies, you have ugogo. Or you have family members. So if there's no one at the family, you would go to your relative, or your relative will come and look after you. So this child-headed household, it's also perpetuating what is happening right now. How can you allow a child to run a home? Because you need to encourage families to be part of the system, because no one is born alone. No one is an island. Those families, they have relatives, but you are sponsoring individualism, and you want to have a positive output. How can a child grow, preside over other kids? I mean, how would you? And then now you come as a social grant minister, and then you put in a lot of money. Obviously, that money is going to be taken away. Obviously, man. I mean, you are a kid. You are 18 years old. You have 2,000 rand. Do you think that you're going to take that 2,000 rand and make sure that these people eat instead of buying a Louis Vuitton? Because you see your friends have Louis Vuitton on Instagram. Would you go to the Durban July today? You had this man yesterday, Moss. So you're definitely going to go there. And what you're going to do now, you're going to fall pregnant, and you're going to use your social grant, because the social grant is coming on the 15th. So you're going to eat this 2,000 for charters, and then you're going to pick it up from the social grant. That's what you're going to do. It's a vicious cycle. How do you address this whole thing? Like, for me, it doesn't make sense. I always ask myself, you are an African person, you understand the system, but you are sitting in the government department, you are talking about this? Like, how? Like, I can understand if a white person, because maybe there's never been that, but an African person, like, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, like why would you agree to this? Why would you, as an African person, agree to the fact that people who are supposed to get this business grant are supposed to have they should be making at least 10 million per annum? How can an African make a 10 million per annum? Like, how would you write this policy? How would you agree to this policy? You know, and then you're going to come back and be like, oh, white people are still, are still rich. We are making them even richer. Like, come on. Like, sorry, man. Sure.
Listen, dude, I really... This is going to be a discussion about you. It's become, and don't by any means think, I don't think you're fascinating, because we've covered a lot of ground here. But I think your opinions and your thoughts on these things, your very educated opinions on these things, are things that I didn't expect to hear from you this morning. I didn't expect to hear any of this. It's very... Oh, man, it's
eye-opening stuff, man.
I find it very inspiring. I got to tell you, like, there's someone... Someone's doing the thinking. It's you. Yeah. I understand how you could be an A&R manager and an artist and a father and all of these things at once.
You're a very, very talented, very brilliant man.
Yeah, that was a proper shut up and listen moment.
We could go for three more hours
and I would like...
He took us to church.
But I'd like to say, please guys, get my album. right at the end.
The new album features Hugh Masekela, DJ Maphorisa. We've got Love, Light and Music, right?
Yes.
And there's a single Bang 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 we played just a second ago.
Yeah, and it's going to be on high rotation from now on.
Correct, go and buy the album. Zakes is not here for his health.
Please buy my album. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
So you guys
inspire me, man. Gareth, you do. You do inspire a lot of. You do inspire a lot of youth. You do inspire a lot of us Africans, because we have a tenant of South Africa of coloring everything, black professional, white, you know. So Africans, thank you very much.
I'm proud of any contribution, man. Thank you. Zakes Bantwini, everybody. What an incredible discussion. You got to listen to that again on the podcast. It's one of those that you'll go over once or twice. Kim Jong-un is starting to lose his patience with Donald Trump and has instructed his nuclear team to step it up in the production of nuclear weapons. There's a slight problem, though. They're running out of scientists. Yes, three of them accidentally fell into Kim's shark tank last week. Oh, no. Another eight are in intensive care after Kim pressed the wrong button on his TV remote and incinerated the entire lab.
Very badly burnt.
Donald Trump's speech at the UN has received mixed reviews. Many of the major world leaders appreciated some of his sentiments but disagreed with him, re-emphasizing that the US is the greatest country in the world. Zimbabwean President Robert Gabriel Mugabe said he really enjoyed Trump's speech. At just 37 seconds... this is the fastest it has taken for Mugabe to fall asleep at the UN, leading to a solid four-hour nap, which saw him all the way through to dinner with his entourage of 70 people. Isn't that great? And finally, Rio Ferdinand's going to start his new career as a boxer. Knowing full well that being an ex-footballer means his life is destined for prostitutes, bar fights with teenagers, and TV punditry, he's decided to rather put his efforts into the ring. He believes there is no way he will be any more embarrassing than Andrew Flintoff, so he's all in. And we will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9.
What a jewel.
Absolutely. All right, thank you very much to our guest this morning, Zakes Bantwini. Thank you very much to Sia Mabali and Ben and Gord and Amanda, and especially to you. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is CliffCentral.com.